We start with football because, I mean, stunned. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say stunned because there were rumors out there that nobody took seriously at the time, but they proved to be correct that the Green Bay Packers had an offer on the table for Micah Parsons, and he ends up getting traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers. Kenny Clark, two first-round draft choices, go to Dallas, and he gets a brand spanking new contract out there in Green Bay as well. So for the Green Bay Packers, who had a really very difficult time under their first-year defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, a year ago, the former Boston College coach, of getting after the quarterback and getting rush. Well, now they've got one of the premier edge rushers in all the National Football League, and Micah Parsons in his mid-20s, and he's going to look to go out there and wreak havoc for the Packers, who's now one of the teams, when you're thinking about it, in the NFC that could potentially get there and get to the Super Bowl. The big question with them is, what version of Jordan Love are you going to get? But yesterday, you know, and there's a number of different layers where you can get into this conversation. You feel for, you know, the Dallas sports fan. I know we're in New York, but, you know, in quick short order, you know, they've seen Luka Doncic get traded from the Dallas Mavericks to the Los Angeles Lakers in one of the more, you know, mind-numbing trades that you've ever seen in the history of the NBA. And now you see Micah Parsons get traded by Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones yesterday in the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers. So you feel for the Dallas sports fans when you see generational talents. You know, one point in time, I mean, I thought it was moronic when people were, but people were comparing Micah Parsons early in his career to Lawrence Taylor, who's the greatest defensive player of all time. And there's nobody in the National Football League. I don't even care what version of Abdul Carter you're going to get for the Giants. I think he's going to be really good. That's going to be what LT was for the Giants. So you feel for the Dallas sports fan. That's number one. Number two, I mean, you know, you could be an idiot and have no money. You could be an idiot and have a lot of money. And that's really what it comes down to when you're looking at Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. You know, you go, here's the thing that's like befuddling when you think about this deal. And we'll bring in and swing it local here in a second. But when you think about this deal, you go through the draft process and you cross your fingers as you know, you're going out there and you're going through the NFL scouting combine, you're going pro days, you got your top 30 visits, everything you're doing your, you know, due diligence, you're sitting down for interviews, all of this stuff, especially when you're looking at first round draft choices to get players of the caliber of Micah Parsons, to get difference makers. Right, those are the guys that you pay. You want to go out there. The problem in a salary cap world, when you're looking at the National Football League, when you look at the NHL now with the, you know, the new deal in the NBA and the second apron, is you want to play great players, great money. You don't want to play good players, great money. That's where you get a problem, right? You're never necessarily just one player away, but you also don't want to go out there and overspend for guys that are good that are not great. And I get free agency, the players do have leverage. But in this scenario, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, how exactly, if you're Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, 6:30 last night, you know, as I'm doing the Rutgers game, you know, taking on, you know, Ohio last night down at Piscataway, you know, and Carlin passes me his phone and get the Schefter report that Parsons is now a Green Bay Packer. And I am absolutely and completely stunned. I mean, I really am. And I understand there were the rumors. But if you're the Dallas Cowboys, how do you look at this year and listen to Stephen and Jerry Jones last night? And Jerry's, listen, 82 years old, God bless. The battle with cancer gives you a great quote. He's got an unbelievable personality. You know, has been good for the National Football League in terms of, you know, some of the stuff that he's had to say, you know, and doesn't parse any words. But how exactly do you come out and say, well, we did this for the betterment of the Dallas Cowboys? How exactly are you better? I heard about the ground game and stopping the run, and I heard about Kenny Clark and what the two first-round draft choices are going to be. But you've got Dak Prescott, you know, who's the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League, right? You're trying to win. You just watched the Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl. You got the Washington Commanders and Jaden Daniels. How exactly, if you're Jerry Jones, do you sit up there and say, we are a better football team now because of the people that we're going to add in the future? Because you know what? We don't have to allocate the money that we're going to allocate to Micah Parsons, and we can allocate it to two or three other players. Well, who are those people that are going to help you in 2025? When exactly is that happening? Like, the clock is ticking when you're looking at Dak Prescott. He's not getting younger. He is getting older. You added George Pickens in the offseason. You're trying to get yourselves back to the Super Bowl, or back to the playoffs, I should say. You've got a new head coach in Brian Schottenheimer, who was a terrible offensive coordinator as he takes over from Mike McCarthy. But how exactly are you a better football team today without Parsons being a part of it because Kenny Clark can stop the run? It makes little to no sense. And listen, the Giants, in this scenario, catch a huge break because of the idiocy down in Dallas. You're talking about, we talk about time and time again, old school football. We could get into, the passing game and the evolution of the quarterback and, you know, how offensive schemes have evolved and all this. Well, football can also be quite simple. And if you get down to brass tacks, and it's this, protect yours and get after theirs. You want to have a good offensive line. You want to have a good defensive line. You want to get after the quarterback. And you want to make sure you can protect your quarterback. Because you know what? If you can't protect it, you can't run it. And Thursday was a good day for the New York Giants. Make no bones about it. Because the Dallas Cowboys are now a weaker football team. Yes, you still got the Philadelphia Eagles in the division. Yes, you still have to deal with, you know, Saquon Barkley having an unbelievable season and, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles winning a Super Bowl. I get it. But if you think about it in-house now for the New York Giants, and you're looking at the complexion of the NFC East, how exactly do you look at the Dallas Cowboys as one and the same you're going to see early on in this season after you see the Washington Commanders? How do you look at them one and the same? Do you think it's going to be easier to put together an offensive game plan knowing that you do not have to deal with Micah Parsons get down in and down out? Of course it will. And give the Packers credit. Green Bay realized what they needed. You got second-year defensive coordinator Halfley out there. They need to get after the quarterback, and they got arguably, you know, top two, you know, edge rusher in the National Football League. They paid him. They gave up an interior defensive lineman and two first-round draft choices. But here's the thing. If they win a Super Bowl, who the hell cares? Because that ultimately is the goal. Not putting together a competitive team, not going out there making the playoffs, but going out there and trying to win a Super Bowl. And for the Giants, you look at the complexion of their season a little bit differently now. Because with their subtraction, it's an addition for the New York Giants. And let me explain. Listen, we've talked about, I mentioned it yesterday, there's been a lot of positivity with the Giants. You know, and I'm not even going to lean into what they looked like during the course of the preseason. And they look great. They look great. Russell Wilson deserves a lot of credit. The role he was asked to undertake, completely changing the narrative about him and his days in Denver and having his own, you know, staff around him and his own office. Everything that we got from Russell Wilson, not being one of the guys, not being a dude. Well, you know what? Russell Wilson has been a dude with the Giants, understands what he needs to do, understands he's not the future answer at the quarterback position, understands that this is going to be short term, and also understands that, you know what? He's on the back nine, 18th hole, 17th hole of his NFL career. It's almost over. But gets it, understands it, but he's wanting to go out there and trying to continue to compete. He loves playing the position, but is going to help guide the young quarterback, Jackson Dart, that is in the room, as will Jameis Winston. Gives you a great quote. So there's a lot of positivity when you look at the Giants. You know, that defense with Abdul Carter, Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns, who's a captain on the team, Dexter Lawrence, go up and down the line, Okereke, another captain, what they did in the offseason, adding Javon Holland and Paulson DeDebo into that defensive backfield, second year for defensive coordinator Shane Bowen. As long as, you know, Andrew Thomas, whatever he is healthy, is able to stay healthy at the left tackle position, the offensive line shouldn't be garbage, which it has been for quite some time. I'm not thinking that the offensive line is going to be the best unit in the National Football League, but we have spent way too many years, way too much oxygen we have wasted talking about the giant offensive line, and we've seen so much money wasted, so much draft capital wasted on the Giants, with the Giants trying to address the offensive line, trying to find end up being non-answers. And now you look at a Giant team that was, at one point in time, 22-1 to win the NFC East. And I'm not going to come on the airwaves on this Friday morning and tell you I think the New York Giants are going to go out there and compete with the Philadelphia Eagles. But I'll tell you this, the Giants this season, it's going to look a hell of a lot different than it did the past 2 years. And if it doesn't, well, then heads are going to roll. And the Giants got an absolute helper yesterday, as did Washington, as did Philadelphia. When you're looking at the complexion of the NFC East, because of the decision by the Dallas Cowboys to move on from Micah Parsons. And to make the decision, and maybe, listen, I was listening to Jerry and Willie this morning. They did a great job. And maybe there's a little something more here. And we don't have to get into kind of the layers of, you know, negotiating with Micah one-on-one, then one having his agent get involved. And listen, I spent 45 minutes last night as I was sitting on the Merritt, because they're paving the Merritt at 11:45. I got my son sleeping in the backseat of the car. They're paving the Merritt. I'm sitting on the Merritt last night. In bumper-to-bumper traffic, supposed to get home, leave at Piscataway, fireworks night, trouble getting out of the parking lot, Rutgers wins, knocks off Ohio 34-31. I'm sitting on the Merritt last night for a good 45 minutes, watching guys pave the road, the smell of tar, fantastic, listening to Jerry and Stephen Jones explain away the decision why they decided to trade Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers, and how all is well down in Dallas. You know, if I was a member of the Giants, I would have popped that up on the big screen, opened myself up a nice bottle of wine, sat back, relaxed, and enjoyed, because it was moronic. I'll tell you this. I mean, pave the roads. 11:45. You're sitting on track. You can't wait to get home. It's a long drive, 75 miles. I don't mind it. I love doing Rutgers football. I was happy they won the football game last night. But there is nothing like when you are crying for bed, trying to get a little bit of sleep, trying to get, you know, a solid 6 hours, turn around, head into the fan studios this morning, get to do the midday show, which I love doing. But here's the deal. Like, you're sitting on there, and people are also then stop their car to watch the people pave. Like, just move. Just move. There's nothing to see. There's no accident. There's nothing to watch. You're not helping. You're not getting out there. You're not scapping the gravel. You're not doing anything. Just move your car. That's all I ask. But you know what entertained me as I was dealing with all that? Jerry and Stephen Jones down in Dallas. Didn't want to get into the timeline. Didn't want to get into how it all fell apart. Wanted to tell you, how many times can he emphasize I want to go out there and stop the run? I mean, like, is Kenny Clark all of a sudden Reggie White? I know Reggie was a defensive end. He could also go out there and play both ways, get after the quarterback, stop the run. I mean, he is not. You know, is Kenny Clark all of a sudden going to be this guy? Is he a Lodi Nata in the middle of that defense? No, he is not. I mean, let's be realistic. Kenny Clark's a good player. I mean, he's a good player. I get it. But the Dallas Cowboys are going to go out there and they want to emphasize that the fact that they have Dante Fowler on the edge to go out there and get after the quarterback, or we can scheme pressure. I mean, it's idiocy. When you think about it, if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, I feel for you. When that deal went down, if you're a Giant fan, you celebrate. You celebrate the move that makes little to no sense. I don't want to hear about the draft capital. I don't want to hear about anything else, because the Dallas Cowboys, as compared to yesterday, when I kicked off the program talking a little bit of baseball, you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys. You're talking about Dak Prescott and Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, an offensive line that's okay, not great, but a defense obviously now led by Micah Parsons and getting after the quarterback and be able to create pressure and everything that Parsons can do on the football. And honestly, entering the fifth year, prime of his career, he's only 26 years old. That's what you thought about the Dallas Cowboys. You said, well, maybe if things go right, maybe the Dallas Cowboys are a playoff team. Now you look at him, you say to yourself, well, they got Schottenheimer as head coach. There's no Micah Parsons on defense. You've got Pickens, you've got Lamb, you've got Prescott. They better score a lot of points. But you know what? According to Jerry and Stephen Jones, they're going to be able to stop the run. And that's why you celebrate if you're the New York Giants. Thursday was a good day. It's been a good offseason. It really has been for the New York Giants and the NFC East. It isn't really now the distraction. There's no focus on, you know, the expectations coming into this year. All the conversation about this unbelievable pressure, which I think is nonsense, on the head coach and Dable, because you know what? They moved into the first round, back into the first round, to go get his quarterback and Jackson Dart coming out of Ole Miss. I understand it was an organizational decision, but make no bones about it. The head coach absolutely adores and loves him. Just listen to him in these pressers when he talks about him. talks about him like he's his son, which I understand. Listen, it's got to be refreshing after dealing with Daniel Jones for the last 3 years. And I like Daniel Jones. You know, I've supported him, but you get the point. And now you have a giant team that looks around the division, and you've got, yes, the Eagles are the team to beat. Yes, you've got Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. You don't have to fawn over that anymore because you know what? That's a lost cause. Water under the bridge. You've got your own young quarterback in Dart at some point in time. Maybe this year, maybe not. Maybe it'll start week one next season. But at some point in time, the Giant fan sees the light at the end of the tunnel at the quarterback position from what they saw from Jackson Dart during the course of the preseason. You got a defense that's going to be a force to be reckoned with that gives you an identity when you think about the great Giant teams of years gone by. Yes, the schedule's difficult going into the season. Who cares? It is what it is. You got to go out there and beat good teams. You got a veteran quarterback in Russell Wilson. You got a big-time playmaker in Malik Nabers. And you got a running back room led by Tracy and led by Scadaboo that you think if the offensive line can go out there and do their job, could beat you and help you offensively in a myriad of different ways. Throw in the tight end position at Theo Johnson. And you know what? Maybe the Giants go out there and surprise some people. Not making the playoffs, but take a massive step forward. Because one of their teams in their division that you were looking up at yesterday weaken themselves. Self-inflicted wound. You don't play good players great money. You play great players great money. You play generational players great money. And the Dallas Cowboys decided to say, thanks but no thanks, strength in numbers. But all is well down in Dallas. And all is well right now out in East Rutherford as well. Because there was an extra bounce in the step. If you're working for the Giants. Win total might only be 5.5 coming into the year. I don't care. Giants have emphasized getting off to a good start this NFL season. I said it before. It bears worth repeating. I think they're beating Washington week one. And I grew up a Commander fan. They had a different nickname at the time, but I grew up a Washington fan. If they obviously beat Washington week number one, then what do you get week number two? You get a weakened opponent. Now you got to go out there and play. Great optimism with the Giants. Looking to take a step forward in 2025. And as I've said before, everyone that was looking for massive change following this past season, change of the general manager in Joe Shane, change in the head coach in Brian Daboll, and you know what? John Mara said thanks, but no thanks. Didn't have the appetite for it and decided to stay the course. In the end, I think that's going to prove out to be the correct decision. And we're going to see it on the football field in about 9 days. There's not many Thursdays in a while where, you know, the Giants have had a good day that, you know, that didn't involve themselves. Like, they've had a good offseason, had a good draft, had a good free agency process, had a good training camp, looked good during the course of the preseason game. There's an extra energy within the building. There's a lot of hope within the building. And yesterday, the Dallas Cowboys decided to trade one of the premier edge rushers in the National Football League away. Thanks. Like I said, put up on the big screen, whether that be the, you know, the 50-inch, 75-inch, whatever it might be. Open up in a nice, your favorite libation. You know, maybe you don't have wine. Maybe you don't have beer. Maybe it's a Coca-Cola or Pepsi or ginger ale, whatever it might be. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Because Jerry and Stephen Jones put on a show for a good 46 minutes last night. Help me get through when they were paving the Merit. I'll tell you that. My son is sleeping in the back seat after a nice Rutgers win. Rivervale, we go. First up, it's Eric. It's the Vale. What's going on, Eric?
Moose, how are you, brother?
Good, Eric. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing really well, man. Good to hear you on the midday. And, well, happy Friday. Happy early Labor Day.
Yeah.
End of the summer. And I suppose happy for everybody that's outside of Dallas, huh?
Oh,
good
no
Lord.
I mean, the Packer fan has got to be. I mean, whatever lakes are out there in Green Bay, I mean, you're jumping into those buck naked. I mean, you're celebrating. You got Micah Parsons. You got a guy that can go out there and attack the quarterback. Now the big question with them is, what version of Jordan Love are you going to get at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly puts Green Bay up in the conversation, and maybe they can stop Philly from repeating. Who knows? I mean, they definitely will be at the top of that list in the NFC now. And I don't understand this from Dallas's perspective. I really don't. Like, there's no way you can convince me that this was a good thing. I mean, Jerry Jones.
Oh, they tried.
And his son are just running that thing into the ground, and it is awful. I mean, two first-round picks. I mean, we complain here in New York, you know, about the teams and no championships and everything else. I mean, how about being a Dallas sports fan right now? I mean, Micah Parsons and Luka Doncic in the same year. The best players at their position in their sport at 26 years old is absolutely stunning, man. And I don't know, like, to me, if I'm a Giants fan, which I'm not, but, like, this could really be a huge turning point for the Giants on top of what was a great offseason for them. And that week two game in Dallas now becomes a must win if you're a Giants fan. Like, now, that, the Giants have to win that game.
It is a distinctly different team. There's no other way to say it otherwise. I mean, it just is. I mean, you take a guy that's a difference maker, that could be a game wrecker, that can tilt the field. That's what Parsons has been able to do in 4 years in the National Football League when he's been healthy and has been on the field. Now you look at the first two games of the season and, you know, you could look at this Giant team potentially being 1-1, maybe even 2-0. Like, I think they're beating Washington week one. You know, I've thought that for quite some time. And I get concerned about Washington's defense, their inability to get after the quarterback. So I do think the Giants are going to get off to, and they've emphasized trying to get off to a good start this year. And that week two matchup in Dallas against the Cowboys now looks distinctly different.
It absolutely does. And I agree with you on Washington. They're one of those that are, I don't know, they're an anomaly to me right now. I don't know if they're going to be better or they're going to be the next, you know, Houston from last year, if they're going to really take a step backwards.
Yeah, but people like to bring up the Stroud regression year two and compare it to Jaden Daniels, and maybe they'll see it. Well, I mean, not every situation is one and the same. I don't think it's really comparable. Stroud last year played behind an awful offensive line. And he also, Nico Collins wasn't necessarily the same playmaker dealing with the hamstring injury that he was the year before. And that's really the big play receiver down there in Houston for the Texans. So I wouldn't necessarily look on a regression for Jaden Daniels. I think he's ridiculously special. He found him at LSU. I wouldn't draw the comparison to Stroud in Houston. I've heard a number of people throw that out there. I just don't agree with it in any way, shape, or form. I get concerned. I don't get concerned about Washington being able to score. I get concerned about Washington being able to stop people.
Correct. Yeah, their defense is where they struggle. And I agree. I think the upside for Jaden Daniels is significantly more than that of C.J. Stroud, as good as C.J. Stroud is. I think Jaden Daniels is absolutely special. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, that's why they play the games, right? We'll see, you know, which teams show up early NFL season is always tough to say because you just don't know. But the Giants are certainly starting in the right place and a far better place than they have in years past. And, you know, you can hope. I mean, I think the division right now, you know, is a much different landscape than it was, as good as Philadelphia is going to be, because I think they are going to be ridiculous. But the Giants could finish middle of the pack and actually, you know, show some improvement with Jackson Dart waiting in the wings, which would be, you know, if I was a Giants fan, would be welcome, that's for sure.
Yeah, Eric, I think you want to see Bowen defensively handle all the assets that he has on all three levels this year well. You know, defense can't be overexposed. The offense has got to go out there and do their part. Obviously, all three phases of the team, you'll hear head coaches talk about that time and time again because it rings true, and it is true. So they're going to go out there, and it bears worth repeating. But I think everything and all the buzz you have about the Giants' defense, I think, is legit. I don't think that's a smoke and mirrors show. And I think they're going to be able to go out there and attack the opposing quarterback. And I think they're going to be able to do it and get a great pressure rate with regularity during the course of the NFL season. Now, how do the games play out? The offense has got to go out there and do their part. But I don't disagree in terms of the overall assessment when you're looking at the Giants. What do you deem to be a successful season in 2025? Well, you'd like a step forward, maybe two. And you're not going to go out there and be greedy. I'm not going to come on the airwaves on this Friday and tell you that I think the Giants are necessarily going to be a playoff team in 2025. But what you would like to see is not leaning back on the fact of what their record is in, you know, one score games, when visually it didn't appear to be that they were that close. I think that aspect changes this year. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that with the more difficult schedule and the more challenges, what you want to have is this Giant team competing at a very high level. to where then 2026, we're doing this show a year from now. You know, before the start of the NFL season, we're talking about the Giants in a distinctly different tone and tenor than we are right now. Mario in Long Beach up next to the fan. What's going on, Mario?
What's going on?
How you doing,
buddy? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Really good opening monologue. I agree with everything you're saying about the Giants. They should do a little bit better this year. But the whole thing, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I didn't hang up.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I was. That'd be kind of rude if I hung up already. And then you complimented me on my monologue if I then cut you off.
No, you wouldn't do that. You're very, your etiquette is very nice on the phone.
Oh, thank you.
So anyway, I think the problem is the offensive line. I'm tired of talking about this for years. They still, for all we're saying, they still went into the season ranked 28th in offensive line by PFS and other areas, right? Now, the problem we also have here is if the offensive line is good, great. Because I think they have improved in a lot of other areas, you know?
Yeah, I think but the I offensive think line we've spent, I mentioned it in the open, we've spent way too many times and way too much oxygen talking about the offensive line. It's been too big of an issue for too long. There's been money misspent in free agency. There's been draft capital where they've tried to, you know, even Evan Neal is the latest example of that. And let's be honest. I mean, Thomas, we'll see exactly when he's healthy and ready to go. But Andrew Thomas is an absolute key along that offensive line because they don't have anybody on that team that can do what he can do at the left tackle position.
Exactly. But here's the problem. He hasn't played a snap.
No, I don't
even in preseason.
I get it.
So that's a big if.
It is a big if.
That's a.
I don't disagree with you. Yes, a big capital IF if.
And listen, Moose. When I read some of the verbiage around their rating, it said they're ranking him 28th with a healthy Jones, with him being healthy. It could be worse. That's what it said in a couple of the write-ups. You know?
Yeah, I know. So, I get it. I mean, I understand. I don't think if Thomas is healthy, I don't think they're going to be the 28th rated offensive line. I get concerned about John Michael Schmitz and his tendency to get overpowered at the center position. I wouldn't put them that low. Like I mentioned before, I don't think they're going to be the best offensive line in the National Football League. They just cannot be an issue. And far too long for the Giants as an organization, the offensive line has been an absolute issue. And if you can't block it, you can't run it. I mean, that's it. That's not just running the football. You can't run an offense. You can't have, and you also don't want to basically throw Jackson Dart to the Wolves and throw him behind an offensive line that can't block. Even as quickly as he gets rid of the football and as decisive as he is with some of his decision-making, what we saw in the preseason, and obviously preseason football distinctly different than what you see in the regular season. Backing up my fear factor that I opened up the program, I got reminded about that on social media by a number of you, and I appreciate that. In the Mets last night, 3 errors, losing to the Marlins, Alonso at first base, but tonight, Jonah Tong, number 21, as Hoff mentioned yesterday, will toe the rubber as looking to bounce back with a victory tonight. Mike in Waterbury, Connecticut, is up next to the fan. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, how are we doing today?
Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Good. So, a longtime Jets fan since 1967, been up and down. I know, still alive. But, you know, here's as we approach this season, both the Jets and Giants, the expectations are low. And one of the things that I think is going to actually happen this week, I think both teams may win their opening games. And then now what? Do we all go crazy? You know, one of these predictions, playoff bound. Both these teams are pretty limited. I mean, where do we go if we actually win these first games? And what do you think?
Yeah, I would not overreact, to one victory. I think if you want to talk about your team when you look at the Jets, I think the expectation this year is building the foundation for future success.
Yeah.
Like, I don't look at the Jets all of a sudden finding it. Unless Justin Fields completely, utterly stuns me and finds a different level at the quarterback position than really we've ever seen before. He's not been a winning quarterback, doesn't throw it consistently enough, not accurate enough, right? When you're talking about trying to limit his throws. Well, the Jets used to limit the throws of Mark Sanchez, right, where they were more successful when he threw 24 or less attempts per game. but they also had a very, very good defense, right? That is in a very good ground game. Like, and I think the offensive line is going to be good. We'll see what the rushing attack is like, and we'll see exactly what the defense is like. I think for Aaron Glenn here, it's about setting a tone and a temperament year one of what it's going to be like, and you got to give him time, and you can't be impatient. I know that's difficult to say if you're a Jet fan because, you know, it's been a long time since you've made the playoffs. You know, you've got that run. You suffered the embarrassment, all the leaks, all the stories coming out of The Athletic with Rosenblatt and Rossini a year ago, and, you know, the Rodgers error, what it proved out to be for 2 years, 1 year lost to injury, last year was banged up, but, you know, it still became about him and had too much power in the building. You know, Glenn has come into the building and tried to fumigate it, right? Just as you try to get rid of, you know, the cockroaches and everything like that, whatever it might be, the ants, the carpenter ants. Maybe you've got a, you know, mouse problem, field mice. They have issues during the course of the winter. They want to be warm, but you want to get rid of them. Whatever it might be. That is what Aaron Glenn is trying to do down in Florham Park and set a tone and temperament for what this organization is going to be about, all about in the future. So this is a building block phase season for the New York Jets.
Yeah, I mean, I think we heard the, I guess where the concern is, we heard the same thing when Saleh came in. You know, tough guy, San Francisco, and, you know, they were going to clean house, they were going to do this the right way. I do feel confident, though, because I was a big Bill Parcells fan, and Aaron Glenn, I think he's bringing that type of attitude, and I think he's going to be given a pretty good leash to develop things the way he wants. The expectations are low. They don't have a lot of money on a quarterback, so if he can build that foundation, I think a lot of fans may get behind it. And I, unfortunately, I'm like with a Joe Beningo, you know, oh, the pain, you know, how are we going to lose this week? But you know, we'll see.
Well, Mike,
it's just fun.
You want to know what you hope that it looks like this year? The Jets play clean football. They're not penalty laden. Yeah. They don't beat themselves. They're smartly coached. They put together a game plan based on the opponent that they're going up against. And that they're prepared week in and week out. Yeah, Saleh was a great spokesman, right? Saleh, all gas, no brakes, you know, gave you a great quote, some of the stuff that he had to say, iron sharpens iron, everything that we've heard from Robert Saleh over the years when he was the head coach of the New York Jets. In the end, he couldn't coach. You know, and that's ultimately what you're judged on. And then he lost control of the building, you know, when they brought Rodgers aboard. And Woody getting involved, and then his sons, and everything that comes along with it. Like, that does not lead to success. That leads to anarchy. I mean, that leads to a dumpster fire, disaster. And that's exactly what we saw with the New York Jets. And that's where Glenn is now needs to be given the freedom and the roadway to be able to run this organization as he sees fit, because it is his franchise. It's not Darren Mooji's. It is Aaron Glenn's franchise. It has nothing to do with the general manager. The general manager was hired after Aaron Glenn was hired because of their relationship over the years in the National Football League, and Glenn felt like they could work together. This is his vision for what Jet football is going to be all about. Make no bones. And, yeah, he's a little bit of a, you know, old-school football coach, best way to put it. Got a little bit of an edge to him. You know, likes to banter back and forth with the media. Love that aspect of it. Do I think the Jets will be impeccably better coached this year? I do, but I think it's difficult to win with the quarterback that's going to be the starter for the New York Jets. Let's head out to Walcott, Connecticut. Walcott, Connecticut. It's Mickey. It's the fan. What's going on, Mickey?
Hey, Moose. Good morning, brother. It's so good to hear you, man. Long time no speak, man. I miss the days when you and Maggie were on the show, man. And I'm not saying everybody else ain't great. They all are. But you guys was a dynamic duo, man. You guys are amazing.
Thank you, Mickey.
But it's good
buddy.
To catch up with you. So I did originally call about the Mets, but if you need me to make a football point, I can make that too. It's up to you.
No, whatever's on your mind. What are you most passionate about this morning, Mickey?
Well, I would say the Mets. You know, they lost last night, and obviously that sucks. There's no sugarcoating it, right? Especially when you come off a sweep of the Phillies. But I think for me, the reason why I wanted to call in was because something that has been kind of ticking me off, you know, grinding my gears is, I'm hearing a bunch of different sports personalities and talk shows and podcasts, and they're all talking about, you know, the Mets have no identity. The Mets have no identity. And I want to say I disagree with everybody. I think the Mets have a clear identity this year, and their identity is unpredictable and inconsistent. And I think we need to just start wrapping our head around that and just enjoy the moment, you know. It's going to be hard because obviously the playoffs is right around the corner, and we have Jonah Tom coming up today, which is amazing. And you just got to ride the waves of the baseball season. And we just got to be honest with ourselves.
Well,
I love the Mets.
Well, Mickey, I don't mean to interrupt you, Mickey. I'll let you continue here in a minute. But I don't know. I think both things can be true, right? I think you could look at it and say, well, what exactly, when people talk about, I don't know who you're referencing, what shows you, you know, what podcast or whatever it might be. But if people talk about what's the identity, right? I came into the season thinking the Mets were going to be defined by their lineup. Really has not consistently been the case, right?
Agreed.
I thought with the addition of Soto to go along with Lindor, Alonso being brought back, Francisco Lindor, Nimmo throwing Vientos based on what he did last year. He's gotten hot in the last 10, 11 games. That's good. Starting to resemble the hitter that he was a year ago. I thought it was going to be the lineup that was kind of going to be what defined it, right? Didn't think it was going to be the strength of the starting rotation. Had questions, concerns about that. Thought the lineup, because of their penchant for the big moment, big hit a year ago, was going to be what defined them. It really has not been the case. So you could look at it and say, well, what exactly is the strength of this team? Are you say, because of Nolan McLean, the strength is the starting staff? Can't really say that. Are you going to say that, well, the strength is the back end of the bullpen? Well, they've got Edwin Diaz. Helsley hasn't worked out. Tyler Rogers has. Soto was a disaster last night. You know, back into the bullpen, you've got concerns. All right, well, then you go back to the lineup, but that hasn't been consistent enough. So you could be true, those people that are saying they don't really have an identity, well, that could be true, but you can also be true saying, well, the team is largely inconsistent. And we talked about it yesterday. Yeah, it's been a long summer, if you're a Met fan, of high expectations coming into the year, and really for the better part of the last 2 months, playing underwhelming baseball.
Yeah. And I'll finish with this in terms of the Mets point. I think what's going to ultimately define what they are and their title of this year and how we're going to look at them is if they show up in October. That's what it really is going to come down to. And I'll make a real quick football point. When it comes to the trade that you were talking about this morning in your monologue, it blows my mind that trade even happened. But I got to remind myself that the Cowboys had an owner that I would consider him the James Dolan of football. It's an owner that doesn't know how to get out of his own way sometimes. And this was an ego move more than anything. And sometimes you just need to sit down, hire the right people, and trust your people.
Yeah, Mickey, I get it, but that's not, you know, you're worth billions upon billions of dollars. You're the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, Jerry Jones at times has been his own worst enemy. Was with Jimmy Johnson, Parcells, obviously, that relationship frayed at the end. Can't get out of his own way. And I don't know exactly what changed. I'm sure there'll be more reporting on it. You listen to Jerry and Steven last night. It seemed like they felt like they had the structure financially of a deal worked out when they had conversations with Micah Parsons. And then his agent wanted to start there at their final number and negotiate upward from that point. I mean, I don't know. All I do know is this. You wake up on this Friday after that deal yesterday, NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys are a significantly weaker team, and the Green Bay Packers are that much stronger. And we don't care necessarily about the NFC North here in New York. You care about the East, and that's where the Giants lie. And you know what? The New York Giants yesterday had themselves a good Thursday and didn't play a game. Didn't have a preseason game. There was nothing to do with, Jackson Dart. Had everything to do with a unforced error by one of their rivals in their own division.